Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents Druden by Scott Sigler and Adrian Picardi. Narrated by Michael John Casey. Performed by a full cast. Druden. Blazing overhead, floodlight halogen lamps washed out the color in a walled pit. Inside the pit to one side, there were three heavily scratched metal doors. The scratches extended past the metal and into the concrete walls of the pit. A separate metal door, 90 degrees from the other three, also bore scratches. On the center door is painted a symbol on the marred, dull gray steel. The symbol, painted in black, is a vertical line intersected at the top and bottom by V's. The one at the top, right side up, the one on the bottom upside down, but neither touch. It is the insignia of the Third Reich's Biologische Waffen, its biological warfare division. The single adjacent door is unlocked and opened. Two German guards wearing what look like makeshift plate body armor and dark goggles enter, the goggles resting around their necks. They escort a third man, an emaciated figure in concentration camp clothes with a pink triangle on the left breast. The skeletal man also wears a black collar about 2 inches wide around his neck. One of the guards points to the center of the pit, and the prisoner fearfully shuffles across the sand and glances at an observation window over 8 feet from the pit floor to see a man and a woman standing behind protective glass, wearing lab coats and with goggles around their necks. The prisoner fell to his knees in the sand and looked to the metal doors before him and to the guards, terror in his eyes.
Bitte, please, do not do this.
The soldiers stare down at him and say nothing. The prisoner looks again to the protective glass high above him as the man looking down raises a microphone to his mouth.
Verlasse ihn. Leave him. Secure the door.
The emaciated prisoner continued to stare at the observation room.
Please, do not kill me.
The two guards exited, the side door clanged shut, followed by two bar locks.
I did nothing wrong.
Open door number 3.
The prisoner swung his face to the doors before him as a mechanical clank echoed in the pit. The center metal door screeched open to reveal a pitch black space. From past the now open door came a rhythmic chirping sound. Tears cascaded down the petrified prisoner's face.
God help me.
In the control room stood Rudolf and Henrietta Maxey, husband and wife scientists and researchers in the Nazi Biological Warfare Division. Rudolf squinted against the brightness of the glass.
Glasses.
Rudolf and Henrietta lifted and donned their goggles from around their necks to reveal that they too wear the same black collars. Rudolf nodded to Henrietta, who then reached for a switch on the console just before them, but hesitated. Rudolf lowered his goggles and looked to her, anger and concern in his eyes.
Why are you hesitating?
Henrietta stared down, her head tilted at an insectile angle.
Hell awaits us for it.
Rudolf glanced down through the glass to the pit, then back to his wife.
Hell is empty. Once the devils are all here.
He put his goggles back on and took his wife's free left hand. Henrietta flipped the switch. And the lights went out. Nothing passed the protective glass but blackness and the terrified breathing of the prisoner. Then, a clicking sound.
Flashing lights.
In the pit, strobe lights flashed. In the flashes, a flicker of movement as something retreated into the pitch-black space of the opened door. Down on the pit floor, the prisoner's body lay ravaged, his throat ripped apart, blood soaked on the front of his concentration camp uniform, The pink triangle faded into a deep red. The dead man's eyes stared up at the flickering strobes.
Close the door.
The center door with the painted insignia swung on its own and slammed shut. The sun sat just above the horizon, almost imprisoned by the majestic trees of the Hurtgen Forest. November of 1944. Wisps of mist and smoke swirl about the towering pines. At the side of a well-rutted road, two German soldiers lie beside an overturned German BMW R75 motorcycle. The soldiers looked to be in repose, except for the bullet hole in the cheek of one and the other, his head bent at an unnatural angle. Distant orders are shouted as a faint rumble of tanks and jeeps shift and move about past a line of trees. Alone, a man with lieutenant patches on his collar stands in and digs the last of three hastily dug battlefield graves. Before each grave, M1 carbines with trigger assembly removed are buried muzzle down, a helmet atop each stock, battered boots sit atop two finished graves, the last set by the side of the one being dug. The waiting internant covered by a tarp. A wooden placard hangs from each rifle, marked with the names of the dead. Private Alan Gibbs, Private Vince Andrews, Private Rory Larson. Slowly, methodically, the man digging, Lieutenant Eric Granville, fills in the graves. These men are losses suffered by the 2nd Platoon, A Company, 1st Battalion, 13th Infantry. In a nearby foxhole, Private Ray Lifter Brown, a thick-bodied man-child in his early 20s, and Private Robert Abelson sit miserable as they watch the lieutenant dig. Lifter canted his head to the lieutenant.
I'm gonna go help him.
He ordered us to stay put. What if another artillery barrage come in?
Well, the lieutenant don't seem worried.
Because he can't die. Only us.
LT, can I help?
No.
Abelson correctly mouthed along with Eric's next response.
My command. My responsibility.
Lifter nodded with a smirk. He dropped his gaze, then lifted it to Abelson.
I heard from Cooper in 3rd Platoon. We're getting replaced.
Cooper said that 2 months ago. And last month. We're still here.
Maybe he's right this time.
Abelson offered a knowing yet dismissive shake of his head. In another nearby foxhole, Private Harold Rabinowitz, in his early 30s, practically vibrated with anger when sitting still. A blood-stained bandage adorned his neck as he sharpened his bayonet. Next was Private Mark Wilson, the very model of a 1940s action hero, and Private Lucas Tibbetts, who was shivering. Tibbetts pulled his collar up and raised his hand to his mouth. Wilson canted his head at the digging lieutenant.
Don't know why the LT does this to himself. The GRU guys are just gonna dig up the bodies anyway.
We haven't heard from the GRU guys in 3 days. He's not gonna let our brothers rot.
Wilson stared at the graves of his friends. Rabinowitz shook his head, never looking up from his bayonet.
They won't rot, they're frozen. And anyway, the dead don't care. Now give it a rest, will you, Tibbetts?
No, fuck you, Rabbi.
Rabinowitz stopped sharpening and looked to Tibbetts.
Your feet still fucked up?
Tibbetts lifted a mud-caked boot, worn through the sole and torn at the toe, to reveal swollen, bruised toes.
Don't know how you walk on that.
It's only pain.
Trench foot's a ticket out of here.
I'm not leaving you guys. Like I said, it's only pain.
Wilson and Rabinowitz shared a look of respect for Tibbetts' toughness. Rabinowitz then looked back to Tibbetts.
Good. We'll kill more Krauts together. You know, Larson's boots were in pretty good shape.
Rabinowitz tilted his head to the graves.
I'm not taking boots from the dead.
Rabinowitz offered a half shrug, half nod.
Suit yourself.
We all need new boots.
I'd settle for some ammo. How are we supposed to fight without ammo?
Or food. I'm so goddamned hungry.
We all are, Rabbi.
Tibbetts dug in his field jacket and came out with a tin of canned beef and offered it to Rabinowitz, who looked past the tin to Tibbetts.
You sure?
I ain't that hungry anymore.
Rabinowitz grabbed the can, pulled a spoon from his own field jacket, and opened it using the key to crank back the seal and pop the lid. He shared it with Wilson. The three men watched as Lieutenant Granville placed the last man in his makeshift grave and began shoveling the sodden German earth over the body. Behind a berm of broken trees sat Sergeant Mac Potts, a grizzled World War I vet brought back to the newest world conflagration. With him were Private Jason Palmer and the young-faced Corporal Bruce Harris. Palmer, gaunt and twitchy, his eyes darted through every shadow, a dirty bandage on his left hand. Harris pulled off his helmet to adjust the knit cap beneath it to reveal advanced male pattern baldness. He shivered as he returned the knit cap to his head, unclear if it were cold, fever, or from battle fatigue. Harris looked over at the recent graves of his friends.
That could have been me. If I hadn't crawled off to bum a smoke, I'd have been in that foxhole with them when that round hit.
You got good luck, Harris?
Ain't no such thing as good luck.
Sarge, you already lived through one world war. And you're saying there's no luck? Come on.
When your number's up, that's it.
Harris stared out at Eric, still filling in the last grave.
If a round comes in, he's a goner.
Nah, he ain't never gonna die.
Thought you said there was no such thing as luck.
He ain't lucky. He's blessed. The shit I've seen him survive...
Eric finished the grave and set Larson's boots on top. He turned, folding his shovel, his face haunted by the loss of his men. Although in his early 30s, Eric's eyes seemed to carry many more decades.
Sergeant!
Potts patted Palmer and Harris on their shoulders and then approached Eric and the graves, Palmer and Harris following behind. Harris carried an SCR-300 field radio on his back. The men kept turning their heads, scanning the area as Potts waved for the others to join. They all came out from cover. Tibbetts limped alongside Wilson, all but Rabinowitz, who stayed put. These men, all that remained of the 2nd Platoon, gathered at the foot of the graves.
Harris, any word from the Graves Registration Unit?
Yes, sir. They're busy. The entire battalion got hit pretty hard last night.
Potts looked around and realized Rabinowitz was still in the foxhole.
Rabbi, get your ass over here.
Rabinowitz pretended not to hear and stared straight ahead.
Rabbi, if you don't get up, I'll...
It's okay, Sergeant. Leave him be.
Potts glared at Rabinowitz for a moment, then let it go and looked back to Eric.
Wilson, a few words?
Eric then gave a quick glance toward the horizon.
Make it fast. The Germans will start another barrage pretty soon.
Wilson stepped forward as Lifter took off his helmet.
Put your fucking helmet back on.
Lifter quickly complied as he offered a nod of apology.
I'm sorry you boys won't be coming home with us. Gibby, you were always hard as nails. We're gonna miss you watching our backs. Vince, you're our brother. But I can't lie. You were a shit soldier. You couldn't shoot for shit. You complained about every step we took. But you saved our lives. And we'll never forget you.
The man nodded.
Larson, we'll send some money home to your wife. We'll make sure she's okay. Now that you're gone, maybe I can finally win a hand of poker.
Lieutenant Granville nodded, then lifted his gaze to Sergeant Potts.
Sergeant Potts, that poem, please.
Potts stepped forward and straightened up. The sergeant didn't look down, but rather out, as if talking past the graves, past the trees, to something else.
If I should die, think only this of me, that there's some corner of a foreign field that is forever America. There shall be in that rich earth a richer dust concealed. A dust whom America bore, shaped, made aware, gave once her flowers to love, her ways to roam. A body of America's, breathing American air, washed by the rivers, blessed by sons of home.
Harris quietly cried as Palmer pulled the crucifix from under his jacket. He rubbed it between his left finger and thumb.
50 of us started out here. We're down to 9.
Ain't it bad luck to talk numbers?
Yeah, Palmer. You of all people should know that.
Tibbetts stared at Larson's boots sitting atop the grave. Eric noticed, then picked them up.
Tibbetts, you're a size 10, right?
Yes, sir.
Eric offered the boots to Tibbetts, who hesitated.
They ain't much better than yours, but Larson can't use them anymore.
Tibbetts looked to Eric, who gave a single nod. The private then took the boots, sat down, and started unlacing his own. A flicker of headlight shot through the morning fog, smoke, and the trees as the entire company darted eyes to 2 officers in a jeep making its way through the forest up from the road toward the platoon. The driver was Lieutenant Colonel John Mayberry, a buttoned-up career military officer with a uniform that showed he didn't stay behind the lines. In the passenger seat was an officer, Captain Lewis Weiner, in a near spotless uniform and gear, but also wearing AN-6531 aviator sunglasses, despite it being just after dawn. His right arm was braced on the handle just to the outside of the jeep, and his left hand held a leather binder.
Sergeant, get the men to cover.
Move it.
The remnants of the 2nd platoon headed to their positions. Tibbetts placed his old boots on Larson's grave and limped off to his foxhole. Wilson, Rabinowitz, and Tibbetts settled back into their foxhole. Tibbetts focused on tying up the newly acquired boots. Rabinowitz eyed down the road while Wilson's eyes went wide.
They pulling us off the line?
Not until I get that record.
You and that fucking record.
Who's the chairborne infantry with the colonel?
Shit. I think that's Captain Weiner.
The OSS guy? What, he's real? How do you know it's him?
I heard he doesn't like to wear boots like the rest of us grunts.
Rabinowitz and Wilson squinted off and eyed Weiner's right foot, jauntily on the edge of the jeep side entrance.
Is he wearing Oxfords? Polished Oxfords?
And sunglasses. Who's this schmuck think he is, General MacArthur?
My feet are rotting and this guy's wearing brand new fancy shoes.
Lifter and Abelson had settled in as Abelson canted his head up the road at the approaching jeep.
That's Captain Weiner. OSS.
OSS? Those spy pussies can't fight.
A guy I know in B Company says Weiner tortured an SS general to get intel on an aqueduct.
Ain't all ducks good in water?
Abelson offered a stunned look.
What?
Aqueduct. Ain't it the only kind?
Abelson gave an incredulous shake of his head at Lifter.
An aqueduct's like an elevated trench or a sewer. Moves water. Brits bombed the hell out of it.
Because Weiner tortured a general.
That's what I heard.
Both men looked back down the road. Lifter shrugged.
Ain't no generals out here.
You can say that again.
Eric moved to a spot in the road that widened before another turn as the jeep kept coming. 2 more men came out from the tree line off to the right and reached Eric just before the jeep. Lieutenant Charlie Yates, CO of 1st Platoon, and Sergeant Harry Gillian, acting CO of 3rd Platoon.
Charlie, Harry, Eric, got any ammo you can spare?
Afraid not. We're damn near dry.
Same here.
Damn it.
Charlie looked at the approaching jeep and gave it an up nod.
I wonder what the old man wants.
Better be resupply or reinforcements. My guys are tapped out. There's no way to fight a war.
The jeep pulled to a stop. 3 men nodded to Mayberry and Weiner. This close to the front, no one salutes.
Colonel, what's the good news?
We're attacking in an hour.
All 3 platoon commanders stared. Sergeant Gillian broke the silence.
Attacking? Sir, we're low on ammo and the men are hurting.
Command just learned the bombing run from 2 days ago knocked out a Nazi communication center. The Krauts are in complete disarray in this area. Command wants to hit them now when they'll have trouble sending for reinforcements.
Mayberry glanced through the trees to the fresh graves.
How many men left in 2nd Platoon?
8. We lost 3 last night.
Damn.
Charlie gave a nod.
We lost 1. Down to 11 men.
Colonel Mayberry looked to Harry.
And 3rd Platoon?
No losses last night, Colonel. I still have 15 men.
Isn't there a 4th Platoon?
The platoon commanders looked to the colonel, who shifted his gaze to Captain Weiner.
We lost all of 4th last week.
Jesus.
3rd Platoon, take Bunker Alpha 26. 1st and 2nd Platoon, combine to take Bunker Alpha 27. Both bunkers have anti-tank cannons. Take them out. 3rd Armored is en route.
Granville's eyes perked up.
We have armor support. The 3rd Herd?
Mayberry's brow dropped down, making clear his unhappiness with the battle plan.
Only as a last resort. Command wants those tanks fresh. Once there's a breach, 3rd Armor is going far in, hopefully to throw the Germans into a panic so they pull back all across the line. You take those 2 bunkers and you hold them until relieved. Understood?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir.
Colonel Mayberry checked his watch.
Our artillery opens up shortly. The barrage will last for 15 minutes. They're targeting the pillbox line, trying to knock out any support that could come up and help. Begin the assault when the barrage finishes at 0730.
Eric dropped his gaze and thought, then looked to the colonel.
Sir, we don't have enough ammo to successfully complete this mission.
Mayberry gestured to the back of the Jeep to 3 boxes of ammo.
That's all I could get. Make sure your men pick your shots carefully.
Eric, Harry, and Charlie exchanged glances. The ammo was a small help, but it was nowhere near enough. Charlie canted his head to the back of the Jeep, and Harry unloaded the boxes.
You will take those bunkers. This is Captain Weiner, OSS.
Weiner offered a nod to the lieutenants that they returned.
I've heard rumors about you, Cap.
The captain offered a smile that never reached his eyes.
I get that a lot.
Mayberry eyed Captain Weiner as Harry stepped back over.
Make this fast.
We have intel there might be a Nazi weapons research facility nearby.
We haven't heard about that, sir.
The intel's new. Have your men check all targets. If staffers from that facility are around, we want them captured.
Check our goddamn targets? Are we take a goddamn fortified bunker?
Those are your orders, Sergeant.
What are we looking for exactly?
People that don't look like soldiers.
Weiner opened his leather binder. Inside, on top of other papers, was a pencil sketch of a double V unit insignia patch of the German Biological Warfare Division.
If you see this on anyone, try to capture them.
What's that insignia represent?
We don't know exactly. Yet.
That's helpful.
Weiner snapped the binder shut.
Just do your job.
Eric bristled, then immediately nodded.
Yes, sir. We'll watch out as best we can.
Mayberry started up the Jeep. The platoon commanders each stepped back.
Good luck, men. Today, we make a difference in this war.
Mayberry and Weiner drove off down the road.
Check our targets. Unbelievable.
Charlie gave a single nod to Harry, then looked to Eric.
Granville, you want the front or the flank?
Well, you've got the numbers, so we'll take the front, draw their fire.
Sounds good.
Charlie, careful your men don't bunch up, okay?
Don't tell me how to run my men.
Eric offered a conciliatory, if regretful, nod.
Yeah, all right, Charlie.
Good luck, lieutenants. See you when it's done.
The men of 2nd Platoon were gathered behind the berm of trees felled by artillery and time. Eric knelt down next to a dirt and stone mock-up of the pillbox they would soon assault as the men loaded M1 cartridges into clips. Their hands were busy, but their faces showed fear and anger.
A 1st Platoon will come from here.
Eric drew an X in the dirt to the right of the pillbox.
We'll attack from the front.
He then drew an X in front of the pillbox with an arrow pointing toward it.
We're going to give them everything we can, which hopefully will let 1st Platoon get close.
Everything we can?
Palmer held up a clip.
I got 50 fucking rounds, LT. That ain't much.
They should take us off the line.
In your dreams.
Shut up. The lieutenant is talking.
The platoon fell silent as Eric took stock of his men.
I know this isn't what you men wanted to hear, but this attack is going forward. If we don't do our part, 1st Platoon will get cut down. I know we're low on ammo. I'll fight until mine is gone, and then I will fight some more. If I have to throw rocks and use sticks, I will do my part. So will you men.
He stared at each man in turn until he got a nod.
Sorry, Lieutenant.
No apology necessary. Just do what you've done since we got here. Oh, and one more thing.
Eric drew the double V symbol in the dirt.
If you see that on anyone's uniform, don't kill them.
The men leaned in and looked at the symbol.
What if they're trying to kill us?
Well, then kill them first. Otherwise, try to take them prisoner.
What is that symbol? Some occult thing? They demons or something?
You're a rare bird, Palmer.
Demons are real, man.
It's some research division. If you see it, let me know, all right?
The men all nodded.
Any questions?
The remaining members of 2nd Platoon traded silent looks with each other. Looks of determination. Of brotherhood. Let's go. The air pulsed with staccato flashes that cast long, there and gone shadows of tall trees that made the smoke and fog glow. Dirt flew through the air as trees shredded and splintered. Voices shouted orders, war cries, the screams of wounded and the cries of the dying in German and English both echoed through the dense forest. 2nd Platoon was hunkered down behind whatever cover they could find as MG-34 machine gun fire peppered their position, coming from their objective, the concrete pillbox. Eric, Potts, and Harris hunkered down together behind a fallen log. Harris had the SCR-300 field radio pressed hard to his ear.
1st Platoon, this is 2nd. We're in position. Over. 1st Platoon, repeat. 2nd Platoon is in position. Over.
We got you, 1st. We're going in. Out.
Eric peeked over cover and looked right to see Charlie and the men of 1st Platoon. A spray of machine gun fire made Eric drop down behind cover.
Lieutenant, are you hit?
Eric ignored Harris and stared over to Potts.
Potts!
Potts leaned out from cover.
Yeah. 1st Platoon is going. We need to give cover and fire.
Got it. We...
Another burst of enemy fire forced Eric and Potts both to duck down.
Cover and fire! Covering fire!
The men of 1st Platoon rose up and fired single shots. German machine gun fire hit their various positions and they ducked back down. Eric crawled to a new spot and looked right. He saw 1st Platoon coming out from cover, attacking and firing. The men were too bunched up.
Come on, Charlie, spread them out.
Eric looked over to the pillbox to see the MG-34 angled toward 1st Platoon, then opened fire. Several of the men of 1st Platoon were gunned down, including Charlie. The others tried to dive for cover, but there wasn't much cover to be had. Their leader was down. They didn't know what to do. They were sitting ducks.
They're gonna break. If they do, we're screwed.
Eric looked around wildly, then shouted to his left.
Rabbi, if you get to that stump on our left, can you take out the gunner?
20 yards to that stump. Give me some cover and I'll nail the bastard.
Tibbetts, Palmer, go with Rabbi. Lifter, Abelson, Harris, covering fire on my command.
Lifter readied his bar. Abelson and Harris got ready with their M1s.
Wilson, Potts, with me. We're going right to link up with 1st. Rabbi, take out that gunner.
Rabinowitz, Palmer, and Tibbetts nodded, their eyes betraying terror.
Covering fire, now!
Harris and Abelson popped up and fired their M1s. Lifter then popped up from behind cover and fired tight bursts from the bar. Eric, Potts, and Wilson were up and running right. Bullets sparked off the concrete of the pillbox. The gun barrel inside the pillbox swung toward Eric, Potts, and Wilson. They dove for cover, drawing the MG-34 fire as it sprayed their area. All the while, Rabinowitz and Palmer sprinted left, staying low. Lifter poured bar fire at the pillbox, causing pockmarks along the front. The machine gun changed angle again, fired at Lifter, which forced he and Harris down as Abelson kept firing. Rabinowitz and Palmer reached the stump. Rabinowitz leaned against the felled tree and analyzed his shot. Palmer and Tibbet stared back at their initial firing point through the fog of war and covered their flank. Then they caught movement in the mist.
Rabbi, we got company!
Keep them off me.
Eric Ponson-Wilson rose and started running again as the pillbox machine gun poured fire in their direction. All three hit the deck. Eric looked over to see one of the men in 1st Platoon get up and run away. The others started to rise, terrified, soon to follow.
Hold your position! I'm coming!
The remaining men of 1st Platoon dropped back down. Palmer and Tibbetts fired at four slowly approaching Germans, three infantrymen and one officer. Two infantrymen fired their carabiners, and one with a SIG 44 firing short bursts. The officer fired a Luger.
They're coming!
Shit! I need a second.
Rabinowitz viewed through his gun sights. He locked in on the pillbox shot. He fired, but his bullet hit the concrete.
Rabbi?
Rabinowitz never lifted his gaze.
Come on, you crowd bastard.
Eric Ponson-Wilson reached 1st Platoon. Eric crawled closer to Charlie, who was wounded. Confused, Charlie started to stand.
Get down!
Eric reached up to grab him just as MG-34 bullets tore through his chest. Charlie's lifeless form fell atop Eric.
Lieutenant!
Lifter slammed home a magazine, then opened up with the bar. Abelson, at his side, fired his M1 as Harris cowered behind cover.
Harris, you fucker! Help me out, goddammit!
Fighting back fear, Harris rose, aimed over the cover, and started firing his M1. Rabinowitz aimed down and fired at the pillbox as bar rounds chipped at the concrete. The MG-34 barrel swung back toward Lifter, revealing a hint of the gunner's hands.
There you are, sweetie.
A small cloud of blood puffed from the opening of the pillbox as the barrel coming from it jerked upwards and stayed aimed at the sky. Eric crawled out from under Charlie's body and lifted his gaze to the cover held by 1st Platoon.
First Platoon, on me!
Eric rose, his face a patchwork of dirt and Charlie's blood.
Get up, dog faces! Let's go!
Eric turned and charged the pillbox. Wilson and Potts rose behind him and followed. The remaining men of 1st Platoon fell in behind them. Tibbetts and Palmer fired at the Germans closing in on their location. One of the Germans dropped. Then a potato masher sailed end over end and landed a few feet from Tibbetts.
Grenade!
Tibbetts was knocked back by the blast. Rabinowitz and Palmer fired multiple rounds at the flanking Germans, then each grabbed Tibbetts by a shoulder and pulled their fallen brethren into a low run back to their previous cover. Eric Wilson and Potts reached the pillbox, their backs to the concrete as 1st Platoon caught up.
Wilson! Grenade!
I'm out!
Eric looked at the 1st Platoon soldiers and pointed to the nearest one.
You! Grenade! Now!
Eric and Potts moved off around to the back of the pillbox. The 1st Platoon soldier pulled the pin and was about to release the lever and throw, but froze when the MG-34 started firing again. Wilson then hopped over the firing MG-34 barrel, grabbed the grenade, released the lever which sprung away, and threw it through the slot.
Fire in the hole!
Wilson quickly grabbed the soldier and pulled him against the wall. A cloud of dust billowed out from the pillbox slot as Wilson pulled another grenade off the soldier. Tibbetts clutched at his ruined, blood-soaked foot. The ground around the foot was now painted red. Palmer kept firing away into the mist that hid the Germans they'd been firing at. Rabinowitz threw a look to Palmer as he moved to Tibbetts.
Save your ammo!
Rabinowitz knelt by Tibbetts and placed the heel of his left hand on Tibbetts' thigh to stem the blood as he reached into his field jacket for a makeshift tourniquet. Eric and Potts waited outside the heavy steel door to the pillbox, their rifles trained on the only way in or out of the fortification. The door flew open as three wounded German infantrymen stumbled out, weapons in hand.
Off the men! Off the men!
Still addled from the grenade, the Germans looked confused and terrified. Two threw down their weapons. The third was about to comply when the men of 1st Platoon came around the corner of the pillbox, saw the Germans, and gunned them down.
Hold your fire!
Eric glared at the members of 1st Platoon. then looked at the dying Germans riddled with bullets. Eric had three prisoners, but now there were just three more lives lost to this war. He then turned his head to Potts, with his eyes downcast.
Secure the pillbox.
Yes, sir.
Potts gave hand signals to the men of 1st Platoon, who followed him into the pillbox as Eric looked into the woods beyond it and saw a dirt road through the trees about 20 meters away.
All clear.
Eric gave a nod to Potts and stared again at the bodies of the German dead and closed his eyes. A few hours later, Rabinowitz, Wilson, Abelson, Potts, and Lifter sat casually on the top of the pillbox as American tanks rolled by. Four of the five offered smiles to the members of the 3rd Armored Division as they rolled past, with the exception of Potts, who was eating out of a can with a German label. Rabinowitz offered a wave as another tank in the division passed by.
Blow their crowd asses off, boys!
Shove a shell up Hitler's ass!
Wilson let out a whistle of support and looked down to the pillbox, then up at Rabinowitz.
Hey, Rabbi, that shot on the gunner count is your 15th?
Rabinowitz looked over to the side of the pillbox where Palmer was bandaging Tibbetts' foot. Eric and Harris sat close by on a felled tree as Harris worked to get someone on the field radio. Eric knelt next to Tibbetts, who was high as a kite on morphine.
Hey, Lieutenant, that's my 15th kill, right?
Can't count that one, Rabbi. You know how it works. We need to see the target drop. As far as we know, Wilson's grenade killed him.
Come on, LT, just count it.
Yeah, what if the war's almost over? How am I gonna break the company record?
If the war's almost over, who cares about the record?
I do. Imagine 18 confirmed kills. I'll be the best marksman the 13th has ever seen.
All you need is four more, Rabbi. Easy peasy.
Should be three more. I got that Nazi fuck.
Rabinowitz offered an up nod to Eric.
How's Tibbetts?
He's out of here.
Eric looked to Tibbetts.
You managed to stick around with Trenchfoot, but that's done. That there is a $1 million wound.
Don't feel like $1 million.
You're going home, buddy.
Tibbetts sat up a bit and looked at his bandaged foot, spots of blood poking through.
I want to stay.
Palmer gave a shake of his head.
I never met no one as tough as you, Tibbetts. No one.
It's only pain. I can...
Tibbetts went rigid as pain shot through him. Eric placed a hand on Tibbetts' shoulder as Tibbetts then leaned back onto his elbows.
Not this time. Your duty is done.
Tibbetts gave a quick nod to Eric and stared again at his foot, then looked to Palmer.
That foot gotta come off.
Palmer looked to Tibbetts with slight surprise, glanced at the foot, and then slowly shifted his gaze back to meet Tibbetts.
You know I'm not a real medic. I'm only doing this until we get a replacement for Baker.
Baker's dead. You ain't. Tell me. They gonna cut off my foot?
Dunno. Maybe.
Help is on the way. Hang in there.
Tibbetts flopped back down onto his back.
I'm real sorry about this, LT.
When you get home, send me an apology card. Okay?
Harris leaned in.
Sir, I have Colonel Mayberry.
Holding the radio, Harris handed the handset to Eric. They walked a few steps away to the tree line.
This is Granville.
Great job, Granville. You men were the tip of the spear.
Thank you, sir.
Casualties?
Eric glanced over at Tibbetts.
1st Platoon got chewed up. Charlie's dead. They lost three more. We have one injured man, sir. He's out of the game, but he'll make it. How about 3rd Platoon?
Ran into a tank. Half of them are already gone. Harry's dead. Tell your men that the Germans are in full retreat, both the 344th and the 353rd Infantry. We took losses, but it was worth it.
Eric closed his eyes, then gave his head a quick shake, as if to shake loose his own thoughts.
I'll tell them, sir.
Stay at your position until further word, Lieutenant. Over.
Yes, sir. Out.
Ah!
After the rest of the 3rd Armored had finished rolling through, the rest of the men in 1st Platoon were positioned to watch for any potential German forces as they held the pillbox. Eric stepped into the pillbox and looked to the blood, spattering, and smoke stains on the interior walls. He pulled the door halfway closed, then stepped to the right of the door and sat down on the floor, his back up against the wall. After glancing up at the slot, looking out into the forest, and then the half-open door, he reached into an inner pocket of his field jacket and pulled out a small photograph. The photo was of a light-skinned black woman, a slight warm smile on her lips as she sat on a blanket, the words Tonquish Creek, 1940, in cursive on the back.
I'm still kicking, my love.
His left thumb gently caressed the face of the woman in the photo.
Sir?
Eric quickly put the photo to his chest, covering it up. Potts gave a two-knock on the half-open metal door, then pressed it open and stepped into the pillbox.
No one here but us pigeons.
Eric gave a relaxed smile and gestured to a spot on the floor next to him for the sergeant. Potts reset the door to half-closed, then stepped over and sat as Eric looked down to the photo. Potts leaned in, smiled, then looked to his lieutenant.
I still think the boys don't care.
Like they don't care about your love life?
Potts looked off toward the slot in the pillbox.
That's different. It ain't illegal for you.
We moved to Michigan.
Eric shook the photo.
Because this is illegal in Alabama, where we both grew up.
Then you should have moved to California. Sun and sand, man.
Eric nudged Potts with an elbow.
Interracial marriages are illegal in California, too.
No shit?
No shit.
Potts glanced toward the door, listened for a beat, then pulled out his own photo of Potts smiling with a younger man at a beach. Eric looked over at the picture.
Your younger brother. Amazing.
The boys believe it.
Huh. I like this picture.
Why?
It proves you can smile.
Oh, you're a fine one to fucking talk about smiling.
Let me see the other one.
Potts pulled out another small photo of himself with a buxom brunette pinup.
Camouflage, Sergeant. It's the key to any proper strategy.
Hey, I tell the boys the truth, that Betsy is a dear friend. What they want to believe is their business.
And they think you're being modest. It's perfect.
Contact! German truck approaching.
Eric and Potts put their photos away and scrambled outside. 2nd Platoon was taking up positions as a German KHD A3000 was lumbering up the road. The truck's canvas sides were rolled down to reveal an empty cargo area. Eric looked over to the right to see the men of 1st Platoon approaching and fixed them with an angry glare.
Get out of here! We have this!
The men stared back at the lieutenant as if they'd been slapped. Eric frowned, then canted his head toward the tree line as the men of the 1st turned back and headed into the woods.
Hello, number 15.
Eric looked to see Rabinowitz behind a tree, aiming at the oncoming truck.
Rabbi, hold your fire!
But I got it!
Hold your fucking fire!
Rabinowitz sneered and leaned away from the tree, his rifle shot not aimed at the driver, but still at the ready.
No one fire!
Eric stepped into the middle of the road, his Thompson in one hand, the other waving at the truck to stop. The men of the 2nd took aim and were ready to shoot as the German KHD A3000 truck slowed, then stopped. Off to the left side of the road, Palmer canted his head at the Sarge.
Sarge, how the fuck did he just drive up?
Yeah, he must have slipped right behind the tanks after they passed over the road.
Abelson!
Abelson ran up to Eric, his M1 at the ready.
Tell the driver to step out.
Raus aus dem Truck! Hand a hawk!
Inside the truck, the driver raised his hands, but that was it.
Tell him again!
Eric raised his Thompson and aimed at the driver.
Raus aus dem...
The driver clumsily opened the door, rushed and almost fell out of the truck, his hands up. The overweight and terrified man wore an ill-fitting uniform of a German transport driver. His jacket was on the small side, and with his hands up, his shirt came untucked to reveal his belly.
Nick Scheiden? Ich bin kein Nazi!
Palmer, secure the prisoner!
I'll help.
Rabbi, stay where you are!
Palmer stepped up and pointed to the ground and then shoved the driver to the ground and searched him. The driver looked about to the woods in fear at seeing so many U.S. troops. On the left side of the road at the tree line, Wilson threw a look to Lifter.
He's eating better than we are.
Maybe the truck's full of food.
You can see into the truck. It's empty. You can see it.
Maybe the driver has a sandwich.
You're an idiot, Lifter.
Lifter, check the truck cabin. Wilson, check the flatbed.
The two ran from the tree line and up to the truck. Lifter stepped up and through the driver's side door and looked around as Wilson jogged behind the truck and flipped up the folded down canvas flaps. Eric stepped over to the driver and gave an up nod to Palmer.
Get him up.
Palmer roughly yanked the driver to his feet. Lifter got out of the truck and stood next to the driver's side door and held up a sandwich.
Hey, Wilson, who's the idiot now?
Lifter took a long, big bite and chewed with a broad smile.
God damn it.
The driver, his hands still in the air, looked to Lifter.
Das ist mein Trottel.
Abelson, tell him to shut up.
Bitte, leise sein.
The driver gave a scared nod as his eyes darted between Abelson and Palmer.
This sandwich is really good, Wilson. Too bad I'm too much of an idiot to share.
Eric glared at Lifter, and Lifter's smile vanished. He then offered Eric the sandwich.
You want some, LT?
Eric looked past Lifter, then slowly walked up to him, gently pushed Lifter aside, and stood before the driver's side door. The truck door had the double V symbol painted on it.
Well, I'll be.
Palmer glanced over at the truck, his weapon still trained on the driver.
The demon symbol.
There aren't any demons.
That's what you said about sandwiches.
Shut the fuck up, Lifter.
Knock it off. Harris?
Sir.
Eric traced the symbol on the door with his right index finger.
Get Mayberry on the horn. Tell him we have something Captain Weiner will want to see.